9. We've all accidentally dropped our phones. They slip out of our bags or our pockets or get knocked off our bedside tables. They even fall into the toilet sometimes. I went through a phase where I had a rule, do not take the phone to the bathroom. Seriously, I would say to myself, you do not need your phone in the bathroom. As a young girl in the 1980s and 90s, I never once went to the bathroom and thought, God, I need a mobile computer in here. I wish someone would invent that for me. Still, my not-in-the-bathroom rule for a smartphone lasted less than a week. Erin Patterson had been using the same phone number for as far back as the police investigated. It ended in 783. That was the number for Erin that everyone had in their contacts. Over the years, the SIM card for that number had been in several handsets, an LG, an Oppo, a Nokia. Most of those handsets were still lying around the house somewhere. All the text messages and group chats and phone records we had heard about were extracted from those early handsets, or from the Samsung A52 that her phone records showed had been in use from June 2021 through to the trip to New Zealand with the kids at the end of 2022. In New Zealand, the screen on that phone broke. We were never told how, and it's probably irrelevant. Erin was soon on Messenger to her Facebook girlfriends with a complaint that many of us will recognise. It makes me realise how ridiculous it is that having a broken phone makes everything so difficult, Erin grumbled. I can't get into my banking on my laptop because it sends an authorisation to my phone, etc., etc. Like, how dumb am I to make everything dependent on a single bloody device? Reluctantly, she bought a new Samsung A23, describing it as the cheapest I could get without being an absolute piece of shit. It was still $400, though. The SIM card for her 783 phone number went into that phone on the 15th of January 2023. That Samsung A23 became known throughout the trial as Phone B. At some point around here, Erin also bought another Samsung A23. It was known as Phone A and had a different serial number from Phone B. And on the 12th of February 2023, that Samsung A23 suddenly became her handset of choice. On that day, Phone B, the one bought in New Zealand, became Jack's phone. It was factory reset, which cleared all Erin's data off it. Then Jack's SIM card went in it. The SIM card for Erin's number, 783, now went into her new Samsung A23, Phone A. This may sound convoluted, but it became important, so stay with me for a second. What it meant was that for the rest of 2023, right up until the infamous lunch on the 29th of July, and even a few days beyond that, Erin's personal phone, the one she used every day, was that new Samsung A23, Phone A. And it became important because that phone has never been found. Why has that phone never been found? We will get to that. But for now, it's enough just to know that it's missing in action. Some information regarding that phone, of course, was still recoverable. The call charge record from Telstra showed which base towers the phone had connected to at any point in time over those months. We can see who Erin called and who called her. We can see when she engaged in a text exchange and where we have the phone used for the other side of that text exchange, like Don's or Simon's, we can read the exchange. But any photos taken or notes recorded or Google searches undertaken with Phone A, they were lost forever. Importantly, this could all be entirely innocent. Phones get lost, it happens. We shouldn't jump to any early conclusions. Be open-minded, be fair. To me, Erin, who had been watching all the proceedings from the dock with her customary air of mild irritation, was still Schrodinger's cat, innocent and guilty. We didn't have enough information to open the box yet. I can't get ahead of myself. But the absence of phone A as a physical object has consequences. Clearly, it might have contained information that could have confirmed or contradicted various assertions from both the prosecution and the defence, but we didn't have it. As we moved through the evidence regarding Erin's actions, movements, and attitudes during 2023, this became regrettable for both sides. Okay, sometime early in 2023, Erin was accepted into a Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery degree at Federation University, which is based in Ballarat and has a few provincial campuses throughout Victoria. No evidence was given on this, beyond Erin saying that she had been accepted into that degree, but nor was it contested, so let's just call it a fact. I did wonder what had prompted Erin in her late 40s to be suddenly interested in nursing. Nothing we had heard to date seemed to indicate a particular interest in that career path, but it was never unpacked by either the prosecution or the defence, and we couldn't ask, so it's all a moot point now. Having been accepted into the degree, though, Erin promptly deferred for a year. In her evidence, she explained that she held grave concerns for her two children about how they were coping at their current school. She wanted to devote all the time she could to ensuring they were the happy beneficiaries of the best education possible. All of this is entirely relatable. We all fret about our children's happiness and schooling. I have been as guilty of that as the next woman. That said, not all of us can afford to take a year off work to devote ourselves to nothing else. Anyway, leaving my personal jealousies aside, in December 2022, Erin vented to her Facebook friends over her argument with Simon regarding child support and school fees. She wrote, "Maybe it's easier if he's not involved in even paying their school fees. It means I can choose their school all by myself and don't have to refer to him. If he wants them to go to a private Christian school, then he can help pay for it. If he doesn't want to help pay for it, then I don't have to send them there, do I? So maybe it just means having more freedom about my choices, a blessing in disguise." Erin later dismissed all those rants on Facebook as mere venting. But that position was kind of weakened when we realised she had wasted no time turning that particular vent into reality. Not only had a choice been made, but it was pretty quickly implemented. During her evidence, Erin said that at the end of March, she informed Simon that she had decided to send the children to a different school. In his evidence, Simon said, "I don't think we had any serious conversation about Jack moving schools." Unlike Nanette, I didn't think those statements were contradictory. Simon apparently dropped Bronte home one day at the end of March, and that's when Erin told him she was taking the kids out of their current school and sending them somewhere else. Simon's response, according to Erin, was, "Okay." End of discussion. That was it. Call me strange, but I can believe that. I am inclined to think that was very close to the truth. And if it was, then there wasn't any serious conversation. Erin wasn't inviting one. She'd done her research, made her decision. That was it. Piss off, you dickhead. But a decision to change schools, and which school to change to, would not have been taken overnight. It's reasonable to imagine that this decision had consumed much of Erin's time through most of February and March. And we had to remember that Erin had time. She had deferred her degree and, apart from feeding a dog and keeping an eye on a goat and watering the plants, what else was she doing? She would drop the kids at school and then have the whole day to do what? Well, initially research other schools, that was one thing, but what else? She had a lot of time for thinking. That's what I figured out. And there was also time to worry about her health. Just to backtrack a little. As far back as October 2021, with Dr. Cassie Zhou, Erin had been worried about whether she might have ovarian cancer and had been Googling symptoms. Her fears about ovarian cancer in general went back even further, way back. Two of her aunties, one on her father's side and one on her mother's, had had ovarian cancer. Erin herself had had an ovarian cyst in 2002, and Bronte, as a newborn, had had a condition that the medical profession continued to misdiagnose for 8 months until a frantic Erin had forced them to keep looking. She claimed that incident had damaged her faith in the health system. It probably had. I didn't argue with any of that. All of this was context for the fears she exhibited in 2021. Erin had done a lot of Googling about ovarian cancer and how it might spread, how it could spread to the lungs and the brain, how it could transform from a brain lymphoma into a heart condition and then multiple sclerosis. In the end, all the tests she underwent at the time proved negative. Whatever her symptoms were, none of them were due to ovarian cancer, brain lymphoma, or multiple sclerosis. Not one. Colin Mandy, her own barrister, asked if she remembered doing all this Googling back in the day, and Erin confirmed she did. Then he asked her to reflect on that time of her life. What did she think about it now? "I think I wasted a lot of time," responded Erin, who indeed, more than most of us, had a lot of time to waste. "Not just my time, but medical people's time through all my doctor Googling. It's hard to justify it, but with the benefit of hindsight, I can see that. Like, I just lost so much faith in the medical system that I decided anything to do with my health and my children's health, I'm going to have to solve that problem myself. But obviously, you know, there's a reason why doctors have medical training that enable them to navigate a way through it, such that every headache is not a brain tumour. So, yep." Her immediate family might not have been aware of the extent of this obsession and Googling. Nonetheless, an array of text messages between Erin, Simon, Don, and Gail throughout 2021 and 2022 reveals they had some insight into her concerns about her health. By February and March of 2023, she wasn't communicating so much with Simon, Don, and Gail. "Fuck 'em" had been her decision back in December. Nonetheless, during those long days after school drop-off, when there wasn't much else to occupy her time, some of those old concerns probably did bubble to the surface. On the 2nd of March 2023, Erin visited the Leongatha Healthcare Clinic and picked up a self-administered test for cervical cancer. I think it's fair to say that, at that time, cancer probably was still a genuine concern. It was an obsession. I get that. And it had persisted through the fallout from the massive blow-up with the whole Patterson family through December and January. We can't forget that either. Decisions can be complex. On the 24th of March, the result of her cervical cancer test came back negative. Erin did not have cancer. Just to be clear, she has never been diagnosed ever with any sort of cancer. By then, the decision on the kids' schooling had been taken. It was soon after that negative test result that Erin informed Simon she was moving the kids to a different school. The move itself wouldn't happen until the beginning of term 3 in early July. Nonetheless, by late March, the die had been cast. Meanwhile, in early April 2023, it was the end of term 1 and school holidays. Records revealed that from the 11th to the 14th of April, Erin stayed at the Mount Waverley apartment in Melbourne with her kids and took them to various holiday activities. Mount Waverley, it turns out, shares boundaries with other Melbourne suburbs like Oakley and Clayton. Remember those names. They have potency. There'll be a test coming up. But for now, what's important to note is that this was the area Erin was living in and shopping in throughout mid-April 2023. And it's worth emphasising the details that we, as a jury, were dealing with here. We were told that for 4 or 5 days in mid-April, Erin was at Mount Waverley and shopping in neighbouring suburbs. But this wasn't a short holiday stay. She was living in Mount Waverley. She had a fridge there and a pantry there, and she knew that she and the kids and or Simon would go back and forth to that Melbourne unit regularly. Okay, hold that thought, because now we come to the 18th of April 2023, and, out of nowhere, someone Erin had never met would change her life. Christine McKenzie was a pharmacist, but she had spent the previous 17 years as a poisons information specialist at the Victorian Poisons Information Centre. In that capacity, she had become interested in learning more about the specific sort of mushrooms that are toxic. In fact, with the help of mycologist Dr. Tom May, she had become very good at identifying toxic mushrooms. She did not claim to be an expert in mushrooms in general, but was specifically able to identify toxic ones, especially the most toxic of them all, deathcap mushrooms. She had developed quite an expertise and was registered on the iNaturalist website as Chris Mck, spelt C-H-R-I-S-M-C-K. Confirmed sightings of deathcap mushrooms in the East Gippsland district of Victoria were, and still are, rare. The species was introduced from Europe, and Christine knew that the mushrooms had a symbiotic relationship with oak trees. The deathcap needs a root of an oak tree to grow. It cannot be cultivated in a commercial environment. It can only grow in a natural space under the canopy of a majestic oak. On the 18th of April 2023, Christine and her husband were visiting family in Lock, a little country town southeast of Melbourne, and about a 30-minute drive from Erin Patterson's home in Leongatha. That afternoon, they took their young grandson and his dog for a walk. During that walk, they strolled through Lock Memorial Reserve, where the town's oval is surrounded by oak trees. It was here that Christine saw deathcaps. She took some photographs and then, knowing there was a kindergarten nearby and that deathcap mushrooms are also toxic to animals, she picked as many of them as she could in an effort to completely rid the area of such toxic fungi. But it was early in the season and there were many oak trees around the reserve, so she could not be sure she had completely neutralised the threat they posed. She had just done the best she could for the time being. As a warning to all, she posted the photos she had taken and the location where they were found on the iNaturalist website. Her intention was to warn people of the danger so that any other deathcap mushrooms that might spawn in the area could be quickly identified and destroyed before any damage was done. Now, we knew that Erin had some knowledge of the iNaturalist website, because that was the website she had used back in May 2022 when she had specifically searched for known locations of deathcaps. But was that just an isolated event? Or had she kept occasionally checking into the iNaturalist website? Unfortunately, because we do not have access to Phone A, we will never know. Erin and her defence team unsurprisingly said that Erin never saw Christine's post. She was oblivious to it and had no idea that it had even been put up. And the prosecution could not produce any evidence that she'd ever seen it. I was told by one of the court officers, who should remain nameless, that in legal circles that amounted to what was colloquially called the Bart Simpson defence. I didn't do it, no one saw me do it, you can't prove a thing. Mind you, down the track, Erin also told police at first that she had never foraged for wild mushrooms at all. Never in her entire life. Until the evidence that she must have foraged for wild mushrooms at least once became insurmountable. Then she had to admit that, okay, yes, all right, maybe she had foraged a bit, innocently, now and then. And this is where a juror has to be wary of prejudice. Just because someone has been caught in one lie doesn't mean you can arbitrarily say, well, she must be lying about this too. Maybe she wasn't. The bigger question was, could everything else still be explained, quite reasonably, if she had not seen Christine McKenzie's post. Well, maybe. First, there were the event-based monitoring, EBM, records for phone A. EBM records, we were told, are made whenever a phone makes a data connection, like when it checks for new emails or when you Google something. For highly technical reasons, given the number of towers in the district, the data was too limited for us to know, beyond all doubt, if Erin's phone had ever travelled to Locke and stayed there, as opposed to merely travelled through Locke. When the forensic digital telecommunications expert Dr. Matthew Sorrell gave evidence, the best he could do was give advice on what the data was most consistent with. Dr. Sorrell was a renowned expert in this sort of work and held degrees and qualifications in this stuff from all over the place. Frankly, though, to me, he looked like his real home should be Hogwarts. Dr. Sorrell was given all the raw data from Erin's phone A connections to various base stations throughout 2023. When he was asked if any of those connections were consistent with trips that took the phone to Locke for a visit, not a transit, the data that came up most compellingly for a visit was the 28th of April. The data from Erin's phone A that day was most consistent with a visit to Locke between 9:14 a.m. and 10 a.m. The phone then went up to Corumburra and was home in Leongatha by midday. Still, so what? If the prosecution was trying to build a circumstantial case out of most consistent with, which in the end became a highly contestable phrase, what else did they have? Did anything else indicate that Erin's trip that day was really a visit to Locke Memorial Reserve? Or were they just clutching at straws? And if they were saying that Erin had found deathcap mushrooms that day and gleefully harvested as many as she could, knowing that they were very seasonal and within a week or two would probably be gone for the year, what other evidence did the prosecution have to back that up? Wasn't it all just wild conjecture? Well, it would have been, except that on the same day, when Erin returned to Leongatha, she did not go straight home. First, she went to the local Hartley Wells Better Home Living Store, and from that store, at 12:17 p.m. on the 28th of April 2023, she bought a Sunbeam Food Lab electronic dehydrator.